You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Ghetto people, yeah.
What are you gonna
your life.
Running like a red disease.
Running like a red disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say, Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say, Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family, hope all is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good day, a good weekend, where you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping, too, the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. But, of course, if it is not, and it has to get done, it must get done, then you'll get it done. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and then there will be programs that are dated and titled. Over 600 of them, Brother Kwaku said. Man, that's content. Yeah. This is African Perspectives. Other programming that we have on here. And this program is Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. And all times are going to give our Eastern times. Monday and Wednesday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Monday and Wednesday. Our story with Baba Wes Johnson out of New Orleans. Monday and Wednesday. On Thursday. On Thursday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. The Black Liberation Movement with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. On Sunday, Pinckney to Pinckney, Sundays from 5 to 6 p.m. with activist Reverend Edward Pinckney out of Benton Harbor, Michigan. Pinckney to Pinckney from 5 to 6 on Sunday. And then at 7 o'clock on Sunday, 7 p.m., once again, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. The Inya Sisim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. March 6th. One of the key reasons for the loss of morale is failure to understand the long-range nature of the revolutionary struggle. James Forman. Revolutions will hear three things which can seriously erode their morale. One is that you can never remove your enemy. Another is the assumption that the revolution cannot occur without a general consensus at the grassroots level. And the third misconception, which is directly tied to the second, is that revolutions must include everyone in order to be successful. This is the most damaging assumption of the three because it implies that the revolution cannot possibly become successful without those of us who have a vested interest in it being European. Affirm, I do not complain. I do. Affirm, I do not complain. I do. I'm a soldier. March 7th. There are days for strong men to courageously expose wrong. The Honorable Adam Clayton Powell, Jr. Extreme individualism removes the possibilities of a moral base.
especially in Western culture, because anything that produces a profit or a physical pleasure becomes morally correct, regardless of the truth of an individual statement. Convincing others of its truth is what is most important. Skill at manipulating others' minds is the ultimate priority. Truth itself is irrelevant. It is set by the winner. So rules are meant to be broken. And because winning is everything and deception the easiest and surest way to winning in Western society, there can be no moral rules except those arbitrarily given by the winner. It is the master of the lie who wins. For a lie is only a lie when one is caught. The indigenous people call this is the way of the forked tongue. It spoke of the lying nature of Urugu. Like us, they learned that Europeans first look to understand the humanity in others. Then they exploit that humanity by pretending commonality of human belief and interests. Most human people cannot believe that any human being, and certainly not a human population, can naturally be that evil. They is that evil. This pretense is accompanied by the systematic and inhumane exploitation of these victims' prey before they are able to realize the deceit. Once they are in power or in a dominant position, this farce of common humanity is put aside, unless they are dealing with a large population, wherein it would take generations to convince them to believe in the lie of our human commonality, our common humanness. Affirm, I am honest with those who are righteous with me. Affirm, I am honest with those who are righteous with me. March 8th. No wise men will insult me, and no fool can. Sister Mava Collins. Individuals become alienated from the political process when they come to recognize that their vote is meaningless. I'll say it again. Individuals become alienated from the political process when they come to recognize that their vote is meaningless. It becomes hard for them to miss the string of candidates who appear before the electorate when it is time to secure votes, only to distance themselves and their interests soon thereafter. Even most of those with good intentions go through this process of show and sell out, sell out. Compromising is part and parcel of the process in a criminally unethical political order. African politicians are even more susceptible in a game full of rules and deception that automatically works to their disadvantage if they refuse to go along to get along. For most African citizens, the only good feeling comes when your candidate are elected, even though you are aware that your interests will eventually be betrayed by these politicians because their loyalty is to the powers that be and not to their constituency. Just to see African faces holding office, regardless of what they do or don't do, is enough for most of our desensitized egos. We got a president in the White House. We got a black face in the White House. We good with that. The fact that the rate at which African politicians are being elected is rising at the same rate that American African males are being incarcerated is enough to make one consider the degree to which our participation in this political process is beneficial to us, is unbeneficial to us as a people. Affirm, I practice African politics. Ashe. Affirm, I practice African politics. Brothers and sisters, the Inya Sesem of Daily Revolutionary Thought. All right. I'm going to get this party started today, family. Our guest is Brother Akil Parker. We're going to bring him up in a minute. All this math. But tomorrow and Sunday, Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa, is having its annual meeting tomorrow and Sunday. and it's on Zoom, and the registration is $35. Starts tomorrow at 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And you can go online to Us Lifting Us at wildapricot.org. Us Lifting Us. ULU, ULU. Birthing the ULU base community, the cornerstone of a new Ujamaa world. Cooperative economics. Us Lifting Us tomorrow and Sunday. All right, let's bring our brother on, Brother Akil Parker. Good morning, my brother. How are you this morning?
Good morning, brother. You're doing great today.
Good.
How are you doing today?
I'm well. Thank you, man. I always look forward to being with you, man, you know, talking with you. It's great.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
Yeah.
It's been a minute, I should.
Yeah.
Too long.
Yeah, no. You got to get on radio more often, brother, with me.
Yeah.
But it was good to see you in Columbus. And once again, outstanding presentation. Good to see you in Columbus, Georgia.
And you know, I didn't have enough time to really complete the presentation.
Right.
I was like halfway.
You only got through half of it? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was like maybe two-thirds of it. But yeah, I was just starting to cook.
Yep. Okay. We appreciate you, man. Believe me. Yeah. The math man. All that math.
Just trying to play my part and help our people, you know, start to use math as a tool for liberation.
That's interesting. How can we use math as a tool for liberation? Because many of us don't consider that, don't think that. We look at history, learning our history as a tool for liberation, mm-hmm. other things, but, you know, math, how can we equate that? How can we incorporate that into our lives, helping us to think right, act right, do right, be right, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, as you said, history definitely is a tool of liberation. Just, you know, having that knowledge of self and having our, you know, awareness of our past and our memory, you know, so we know where we came from and know what we already did and what our ancestors already did. So hopefully we won't have to make some of the same mistakes or repeat, you know, some of the errors that, you know, naturally occur in human experience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we learn from that. But I think part of the problem is that the context in which we're taught math in public schools and now in charter schools and even, you know, in many private schools that we attend that aren't controlled by Black people is the way math is taught to us, it's seen as something very abstract and also something very Eurocentric.
Okay.
And a lot of people looking at math as like many subjects, like a passport into honorary whiteness, right? You don't look at math fundamentally as a language, one, that can help to model and give us better understanding of everything that's happening in the universe, on our block, in our neighborhood, in our community, what we see on television, social media, whatever. And also, we don't see it as a system of problem solving, because math fundamentally is a collection of systems for problem solving. And as human beings, we're always going to have problems. We're always going to have conflicts, which is not necessarily a bad thing in and of itself, having conflicts and having problems. But what is an issue is when we don't know how to, one, identify the problems, and we don't know how to solve the problems. And what math really does, whether it's arithmetic, whether it's algebra 1, algebra 2, pre-algebra, whether it's geometry, pre-calculus, trigonometry, calculus, statistics, and even higher level math beyond those courses, it helps us to be able to solve problems.
And that's what's important, and that's the thing.
One of our main problems is that we're not liberated, right?
Right.
We're not liberated as the current state of affairs, right? So, you know, that's how math can help us. And simultaneously, while we're learning how to solve problems, what also happens is we end up developing our critical thinking ability.
Right.
That's what happens. We end up developing that critical thinking ability, because that's really key, because many of us in the African-centered community, you know, and, you know, we've studied certain things and certain, you know, ancestors and scholars and even those that are still with us in the physical, and they lay things out for us and things make sense to us because we have a certain level of critical thinking ability. But a lot of people lack that critical thinking ability, so they look at us like we're crazy, right? My belief is that if many of these people had more critical thinking ability, then they would be able to see the logic, even if they disagree, even if they disagree and say, well, you know, I don't think we should do that for whatever reason. Maybe they're, you know, fearful, maybe they don't think it'll work, but at least they'll understand that there's validity to a lot of things that we're saying. And critical thinking will oftentimes bring you to that. And so many of us lack the critical thinking ability. So what I say is that the way math is taught, it's largely taught incorrectly and improperly to us. Some people are, it is being taught to some people in some groups as a system of problem solving. But for many of us, it's not. It's just a bunch of, for many of us, the way we're taught it, you know, oftentimes because teachers are not properly trained, the teachers, you know, for you know, also the learning environment may not be conducive to actual, to true learning. You know, it's taught just as a bunch of random numbers and operator symbols, plus signs, minus signs, exponents, and we don't see the connection, or the teacher's not able to stress the connection between those numbers and plus and minus signs to everyday lived experience. So that's part of like why, you know, we run into this issue of not seeing the true value of math, because I can name almost any problem in our society that we experience, whether it be economic, financial, and there's math, there's mathematics involved. Like a lot of things that we do when we talk about economics, math is the foundation of economics.
Yes.
And those that go to society, they know this, right? Mm-hmm. And they're making policies, they're you know, creating systems and situations that are meant to, you know, keep us enslaved financially in a certain, to a certain degree. And a lot of us don't even recognize it because we may not understand the concept of what a fraction really is, or what a ratio really is, or what a proportion really is, right? When we talk about, you know, governmental entities, the local city council, the state government, the federal government, you know, allocating resources to communities, we don't understand the concept or recognize oftentimes, you know, disproportionate relationships. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we might hear that term and think we have an understanding of it, but it may be a superficial understanding. So it's not a real understanding.
Right.
And one of the things I often that I want to reiterate here is that if we don't understand fractions, with so many children, if you talk with them, they'll tell you, I hate fractions. So many children hate fractions, don't understand fractions, mm-hmm. can't add fractions, can't subtract fractions, can't multiply them, can't reduce fractions, can't find a common denominator between two fractions that have different denominators if you give them a problem, right? If you don't understand fractions, we won't be able to understand. There's a chain reaction, right? If you don't understand fractions, you won't be able to understand ratios. If you don't understand ratios, in turn, you won't be able to understand proportions. If you can't understand proportions, then when you're, you know, confronted with or experiencing that disproportionate relationship where your community is being allocated less than its fair share in terms of financial and economic resources, you won't even know that that's happening.
That's right.
And then some politician will get on TV and tell you that this is a good deal. This is a fair and equitable situation. Mm-hmm. And if you don't understand the mathematics involved, you'll believe them or her. Mm-hmm. And especially if it's a black person, because, you know, these Europeans, they get the, you know, through neocolonialism, they'll march out, you know, the black person that, you know, has the charisma and has the optics, and, you know, cosmetically, you want to feel like, oh, this brother's down with us, or this sister's down with us. And they'll tell you that this is a good deal. They'll tell you that this is fair. But, and all along, you don't understand the mathematics behind that, so you don't know you're getting jerked.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the thought. So the root of it is not understanding the mathematics. We got to understand mathematics. And there's not coincidental or accidental, you know, that so many black children, whether it be in Atlanta, whether it be in Baltimore, Detroit, L.A., D.C., wherever, like, you know, are not in mass, are not learning mathematics. Not only are they not learning mathematics, they're being programmed to think that mathematics is not for them. Because that's a bigger issue, right? Cause,
right.
Because the things that children believe are for them, the children are going to have the intellectual curiosity to go and figure out on their own. Mm-hmm. You might not even need a teacher. I don't need you. Like, children don't need somebody to teach them how to play a video game, how to teach them how to play a game necessarily. If there's value instilled in that game or in that video game or in that experience, they're going to figure it out. They're going to figure out how to learn it. They're going to fit in to the best of their ability and become proficient. Mm-hmm. Right. And there's going to be a community of them that are doing that. They don't need anybody to, like, you know, organize them into a classroom. And with an adult standing in front of the room saying, look, okay, step one, this is what you do. Step two, you do this. No, they have the intellectual curiosity already. So what has happened is we've been programmed for such a long time, and our parents and grandparents and uncles and aunts have also been programmed. So then in the household, it becomes this intergenerational issue.
Exactly. Where,
because, you know, my grandmother, my grandfather, yeah. my uncle, my mom, my dad, they were fearful of mathematics. They were uncomfortable with mathematics and their experience, so they passed that on to me and passed it on to the children in subtle ways. And a lot of adults don't even realize when they're doing this. And then, you know, so then the child is in school, not understanding, and they're feeling like, oh, this isn't for me anyway. So let me just, you know, I might start, you know, clowning around in class and disrupting the class and, you know, preventing other people from learning too while I'm not learning at the same time. So that's another major issue, like this lack of intellectual curiosity around mathematics that we have, because we don't think we've been duped into believing that math isn't for us, right? Mm-hmm. It's a similar game, like Malcolm X said, and you know, this 2025, the 100th anniversary of his birth in 1925, he said it's the same game going all the time. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, how a lot of us, you know, do not want to embrace Africa. You know, we don't want to be African, you know, because right. we were told that, you know, Africa, we shouldn't want to identify with Africa, but yet that's where most of the world's natural resources are, and that's where, you know, our heritage is. Mm-hmm. But people don't have been convinced to not want to identify with it. So the same game is going, like, we've been taught to not want to identify with mathematics. And then that just makes us susceptible to being taken advantage of, you know, and, mm-hmm. and we in ways that we don't even realize. Like, when the children ask the question, which is a good question, when am I going to use this stuff? Why do I need to know this? Those are actually excellent questions. And as teachers, again, properly trained teachers should have multiple answers to that question, because the answers may vary based on the student and based on the situation. But there are a lot of answers to that question. Like, early in my teaching career, I didn't have a lot of good answers to that question. In fact, I would get offended when students would ask that, right? Sometimes I would be in my feelings, but I had to tighten up and not take that personal. So I had to stop taking that personal and realize that it's really a very valid question. And the responsibility was on me as the educator to have a valid answer to that question, and have multiple answers to that question. But what that question does is, oftentimes when it goes unanswered or not answered in an appropriate way,
right.
it almost gives it validates
their feelings towards it. So then what is a good appropriate, well, I know they may vary, but what might be the most sound answer to that question to motivate a young person to consider being more efficient and proficient in math?
You got it. So I would say one of the most profound answers is, you got to know how to figure stuff out, you know, especially for young men, for young boys. Mm-hmm. Like, how you going to be grow up and be a young man one day and be responsible for a community, for your household, for your family, you know, for your girl, for your wife, for your block or whatever, when you can't figure stuff out? Right, you're gonna put yourself in a situation where you gotta ask your iPhone what's the answer to the question. You wanna ask ChatGPT what the answer to a question is. You don't have the brain power to figure something out. We gotta just, on a very fundamental level, get back to some very basic things, like just figure stuff out. Like, grown men and women have to be able to just figure things out.
But you're talking about using your mind. You're talking about being analytical. You're talking about, you know, going through the rigors of putting things together to come out with the desired outcome. And in essence, mm-hmm. in today's world, because of this thing that we have, everybody has it. Even little kids have it in their hands. It's a mini computer, as you know, that, no, mm-hmm. I'll Google that. I'll, you know, chat PDP or whatever. I'll, I'll figure it. I mean, I ain't going to figure it out. I'll figure out how to find it, and then I'll go there and I'll get the answer. You know, that's
right.
The thinking.
And, you know, connected to that, I want to talk more about that too. Is like we got to, you know, again, back to the economics, right? It's the socioeconomic system we exist under, which is monopoly capitalism. Mm-hmm. And essentially the essence of monopoly capitalism is the input versus output relationship, where as a capitalist, you win by offering the minimal input and receiving the maximum output. Mm. So yeah. What ends up, like, again, like, you know, the old nursery rhyme, I'm trying to make a dollar out of 15 cents, right? I put up 15 cents and I make 85 cent profit, right? Because now I got a dollar now, right? Minimal input, maximum output, right? So that's the mentality that's been ingrained into a lot of us, right? And I'm not saying that we should necessarily get rid of that, but I hope that when those resources are accumulated, we can then take them and leverage them and build institutions for our community to benefit from.
Yeah.
But my point was, what I brought that up because it affects all aspects. It's like it's omnipresent. It affects all aspects of our existence. Because then now it's like, okay, well, again, minimal input. I'm going to put forth minimal thought, but I want to get out the maximum result. So minimal thought is what? Zero thought, right? So it requires zero thought to hit a button on my smartphone and ask the question to Siri. Or if I'm in the house, ask the question to Alexa, right? Minimal thought, zero thought. And then they just tell me the answer. So now I have an answer and now I can go on about my business. The problem becomes, how do we know that the answer is correct?
And how do you apply it? How can you apply it? Because you only did say, it said this or you read that, but then the real deal is how to apply it? How applicable can it be to our situation?
And that's what it, and you need critical thinking in order to know how to apply it.
Yeah,
gotta have critical thinking. And again, I think you know, in terms of, I guess, speaking in terms of artificial intelligence and machine learning, which is something very important that I highly recommend. I was at a conference down in Austin, Texas, for the past 4 days. I was at the South by Southwest EDU conference, the educator conference, and there were a lot of sessions and panels about artificial intelligence. And I went to a few of them. And one of the things I realized was, like, I've been hearing about artificial intelligence and I've been hearing people talk about it and, you know, seeing different people comment on it, but I haven't done the knowledge on it. I haven't really studied it. So I just ordered some books on it because I really want to develop a very deep understanding of what we're about to be dealing with and what the world is about to look like, right? So I highly recommend our people to really study this, right? It's not enough to just watch the little TikTok reels about it, watch the Instagram reels about it, watch the YouTube videos about it. It's not enough. That can, you know, maybe introduce you to some ideas, but I mean, that's another thing in terms of getting back to the basics. We got to get back to sitting down with books and reading books and taking notes and annotating and highlighting and underlining and writing questions down in the margins of the books and on paper, and then having conversations and getting into, like, study groups like ASCAC is well known for, or, you know, other groups like AAPRP with their work study and whatnot. We got to really get back to that, just really studying these concepts and these ideas that are going to affect all of our lives. And, you know, like I was mentioning about, you know, being able to figure stuff out is so important. And it's also important for us to understand, because young people will be quick to say, well, I'm never going to be in the grocery. How's the Pythagorean theorem going to help me? How's Y equals MX plus B going to help me? How's the quadratic formula going to help me? And this, the reason is it's not surface level, right?
Right.
You might never use that specific formula in your adult life. You might not. However, when you're sitting in a classroom and you're given the worksheet, or you're looking up at the board or the smart board or the dry erase board, and you have to answer a question involving that, the way you have to think and process information and figure something out is the same way you're going to have to figure things out when you become a grown man. When you have to figure out, okay, I have this conflict with my wife, my girlfriend, my baby mother, my, you know, or sister with her baby father, or the person that owns the house that you live in, and your rent is late, and you're trying to work something out with them so that you don't get evicted. or you got to get to the, got to go to the grocery store and buy groceries, and you got this much cash, and you got this much money in food stamps, and you got to, the money got to last for this, this amount of time. These are all problems. That these are all math equations. Mm-hmm. Every conflict that we have in life is a math equation. And if we know how to process information and figure things out strategically, then we create better outcomes for ourselves. So we got to, like, let these children know, like, listen, this is how the Pythagorean theorem is going to help you. This is how the quadratic formula is going to help you. Because when you're sitting in the classroom and you're solving those problems, because that's like practice, right? That's like a, it's a low stakes environment. High school, middle school, it's like, it seems high stakes, and it is to a degree, but that's your time to practice problem solving. That's your time to practice using your brain to figure things out. So by the time you get out into the world, you'll know how to figure things out when it does matter. When you're in a, you might end up in a situation where somebody might kill you or hurt you if you don't figure it out, if you don't come with the correct solution or draw the correct conclusion, right? That could really happen, you know. So these are the things that children got to understand, and we as adults. We got to have these explicit conversations with these children and let them know the value of mathematics and mathematics classes, so they don't just go in class and just goof off, or, you know, just go to sleep in the back, or just, if they have a school that's not, a cell phone free school, if, you know, or just sit in the back and just, you know, use their phone the whole math class, you know, because they don't like math, and they've been programmed since a young age that math is too difficult. And then, you know, and then it's like, you know, it reminds me of Kwame Ture saying that, you know, what, you know, one of the habits of American capitalism is it not only makes you ignorant, but then it'll make you arrogant in your ignorance. Mm. And we see this with students, because students will say, you know, okay, I don't know math, right? So they expose their ignorance sometimes, you know, but then they'll say, I don't need this anyway. Right. So they become arrogant. They're like, oh, math is irrelevant anyway. I don't even need it. Right. Well, so that's the way to just.
Right. Because they know, because in their mind, I can add and subtract, you know, I can count my money. I can add and subtract. But there are other problem. Things about the issues about money, just like you were saying before, as you prepared things that you need to, you know, budget, you need to allocate this, that, and other to continue with your life. You know, you got to make sure you do it in a timely manner.
If I could, I want to talk about that phrase, that, you know, that statement that so many children make. I've heard it all for the last 20 years, as long as I've been teaching mathematics. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a justification for being deficient in mathematics. All I need to know how to do is count my money. I'm like, that's cute. You can say that. But how do you know that the amount of money that you're counting is actually the amount that is owed to you?
There it is.
That's where the algebra comes into play. Because mm-hmm. if I do a job for somebody, and we agree to a certain amount based on certain parameters and certain conditions, right? And there are percentages involved. I mean, you think about all the rappers that always talk about the rappers that get jerked in these contracts that they sign and whatnot.
Exactly.
And people can make it a reading issue, right? Oh, I didn't know how to read the contract. No, that contract was a math word problem. You didn't understand. Granted, you may not have had very good reading comprehension skills, but you didn't understand math. You didn't understand algebra, right? These are the same rappers that end up going on these podcasts today, you know, that a lot of people listen to, a lot of people watch and say, oh, I never needed Algebra 2. Bro, if you'd have knew Algebra 2, you probably wouldn't have signed that dumbass contract you signed, right? Or at least you would have known what you was doing. Even if you did sign it, you at least known what you was doing, right? So these are the things that end up happening. Just not understanding, you know, the language of mathematics and whatnot.
Because math is not the European. They didn't create it. No, in fact, everything that in creation happened and coming through us as Africans, the foundation of it, there's been some improvements, I'm quite sure, by Chinese, by Asians, and of course by Europeans and Arabs. Mm-hmm. You know, in fact, the word algebra is Arab. Algebra. And other things are like that. But the reality is, that's why when they say, well, I can't do math, you created math. You're the first mathematicians.
Right.
When you look at, hey, man, have you checked out Great Pyramid K 2019 yet? Okay.
You recommended that.
I recommend it many times. You haven't finished it. I know. It's long. Yeah. It's long. But, I mean, it tells you how pi was created. It tells you how the golden ratio, you know, all of those things were created and created by us. Things that that are so fundamental that it is not about who it is not about a certain group or a culture or so forth. It is universal, truly universal. And, you know, Caucasians always like to think that they are universal in everything, you know, their political system, their economic system, you know, their educational system. They're universal in everything. They believe that they the shit, you know. But, of course, we know how messed up we are because of them, you know, going through their educational process and making it deficient, making us deficient because of it, you know. So, and probably one of the most deficient part of it is math.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. And as I got off track, and, you know, in my last statement, I was talking about students with that comment about only needing to know how to count their money. Mm-hmm. The issue is, like, you know, I could do a job for somebody and we could, you know, have a certain agreement. And then, you know, at the end of the job, the person may give me $200 and, you know, give me the little, you know, $10, $20 bills. I count them out, $20, $40, $60, $80, $100, $120, $140, $160, $180, $200. I counted it out, right? But then what if I'm not thinking about the fact that, okay, I perhaps didn't really understand the conditions or the actual agreement or the details of the agreement. If I had, based upon the work that I produced, perhaps that person actually might owe me $2,000. But if I didn't know that they actually owed me $2,000, which happens all the time in different ways and methods, I just got robbed for $1,800. But I've been walking around with this kind of arrogant attitude that, oh, all I need to know how to do is count my money. I don't need to understand pre-calculus, and I don't need to understand trigonometry. And all of that stuff does is one of the main things that helps develop your brain to be more of a critical thinker.
Right.
And to be more analytical. When you find yourself in these situations, you're able to, you know, constantly always be processing information to make sure that, you know, the left side equals the right side. And that's how you really know if you're getting robbed and taken advantage of. So many of us don't even know when we're getting taken advantage of, don't even know when we get robbed. And somebody will rob us with a smile and smile in our face and shake our hand at the same time. And we don't even dig in. We don't even know it, right? Because we don't understand the mathematics. They understand the mathematics, but we don't understand the mathematics. So we end up in situations where we think that somebody is doing us a favor and standing on business and doing good business, and they're actually stealing from us and smiling in our face and shaking our hand. Right? This is what is happening because we don't know the mathematics. But when you know the mathematics, a person can't do that to you. They're not able to do that to you because you're able to call them out and check them on it. Right? So these are like, you know, these are the reasons why we have to be programmed to shun math and turn away from math and run away from math and try to discourage others from dealing with math. Because what we also don't understand, which is a mathematical approach, is this. For every time somebody says, a black child says, you know, I don't like math, I hate math, it's too hard, there's no point, you're essentially disqualifying yourself from competition, right? Mm-hmm. It's almost like somebody saying, you know, some child saying, you know what, I hate running. Running is corny. Why would you ever want to run? I hate that. Mm-hmm. At that point, you're disqualifying yourself from playing competitive sports. Mm-hmm. At that moment, you're never going to be a football player. You're never going to be a basketball player. You're never going to play baseball, soccer. You're never going to play any sport or do anything of a competitive nature that requires running. So now when you say the same thing about mathematics, now you're disqualifying yourself from any career in STEM, right? Science, being a scientist, doing something involving technology, becoming an engineer, right? Going into medicine, going into many of the higher level healthcare positions. You're disqualifying yourself from that, mm-hmm. right? There's so many, like, you know, there's so many positions, especially now with the advent of artificial intelligence that we mentioned earlier, a lot of these menial jobs that a lot of people work and have been working are going to be eliminated because artificial intelligence is going to do these jobs. So you're going to have to be able to compete on a higher level and have some higher level skills. So when you don't have these higher level skills, You're going to be unemployable almost. You're essentially going to be unemployable. And this is what people have to start thinking about.
Yeah, I tell you, that's a messed up equation. I've always said for the last 15, 20 years about technology taking over. You know, there are more and more people and less jobs. I make an issue of the post office. I still write out checks and put stamps on them and take them to the post office because I want the people at the post office to have a job. You know, it's easy to deal with the automation. It's easy to deal with the artificial intelligence, you know. But yet, pretty soon, there won't be any jobs. Pretty soon, there'll be a number of people, and y'all going to be at each other's throat, you know.
Right.
Because of the scarcity.
And somebody benefits.
Yeah.
And somebody benefits inevitably. Like, and that's the thing we also have to consider. Again, the mathematical mindset will lead you to understanding that my problem is a benefit to someone else because this is a zero-sum game. This is an equation. All of our life experiences can be modeled as equations, right? Mm-hmm. So because we often think, we as human beings, we tend to be very self-centered, and we only look at things from our own perspective in many occasions. And that we do ourselves a disservice when we do that because what happens is you say, oh, well, this is a problem for me, so therefore it must be a problem for everybody. No. The problem for you, because again, like I was just discussing about us disqualifying ourselves from STEM careers. As soon as you disqualify all these hundreds of thousands or millions of Black children disqualify themselves from participation in STEM careers, what does that mean? That's less competition for the European kids, the Asian kids, the Arab kids that might be living in different types of environments where math is promoted to them, where they're learning higher level math at earlier ages and on a more consistent basis. And those that have a more positive relationship with mathematics, now it's easier for them to get those opportunities because they got less people to compete with, because they're not competing with Black kids in the hood or Black kids in the suburbs. Because a lot of us as Black kids are being programmed to say, oh, math ain't for me. Cool. That's great. I love that, because now I don't got to compete with you. So now it's going to be easier for me to get the jobs as the computer scientists that's going to be creating the artificial intelligence. It's going to be easier for them to become the physicians and the anesthesiologists and the cardiologists and the neurosurgeons. It's going to be easier for them to become the mechanical engineers that are going to be designing the electric cars, right? Or cars that might run on hydrogen fuel for water or whatever. It's going to be much easier for them to do that because they have less competition. So this is all a big game that we got to understand, and our children don't understand this. And I don't think there's a lot of teachers that are actually having these explicit conversations. We often talk like some of the rappers might come out and say, you know, you fall for the trap. Like, they want you to sell dope so that you can get locked up. True, that's a trap, right? But there's another trap, a more significant trap, which is the trap of claiming and admitting that math is irrelevant and too difficult. Because once you do that, now you're trapped and locked out of these opportunities that are going to become more and more prevalent as the 21st century progresses. I mentioned I was at that conference. I was at and one of the panels I went to, it was about AI, right? The ethics of AI for Black children and whatnot. And one of the statistics that was dropped, I haven't researched it, but it seems plausible. But again, I want to research it. The brother on stage said that AI is going, due to artificial intelligence, in the next, I don't know, 10 to 20 years, I don't remember the time frame, but he said, you know, in the future, the near future, 85 million jobs will be eliminated, but 97 million jobs will be created, right? Now, again, I want to research this to verify it further. That's a 12 million job deficit, right, on the positive side, right? But those 97 million jobs require higher level thinking ability, mathematical ability. So those 85 million jobs that are going to be eliminated are those jobs where the people that, you know, went through school and was like, nah, I don't need math. I'm cool on that. Let me go get this job. I'm going to just go over here and get this little job, you know, make my little $15 an hour. Those jobs are going to be gone. And it's a subtle thing that has been happening gradually, right, like over time. It's like, you know, like in the grocery store with the self-scan checkout, like in CVS or Rite Aid or Walgreens with the self-scan checkout. You go to McDonald's now.
That's why I don't do them. That's why I really, hey man, that's why I don't do them. I specifically go to the counter and I want to pay cash. You know, I'm very old school in that respect, man. because I understand what's happening.
Right. You understand that. You understand it. You understand the impact. But a lot of these corporations, and also the way the young people in Gen Z, and I'm sure, what is it, Gen A, Gen AA, or whatever it may be called, I'm not sure, they're being conditioned and taught and educated in a certain way in about, you know, how to you know, navigate the technology. So a lot of these things that we've done, you know, growing up, are not even going to be available. Mm-hmm. And these are the things that people have to understand and take into consideration, and we have to prepare ourselves, right? As I always think about, and we got to prepare ourselves for the future, because a lot of people living in 2025 right now, they are preparing themselves for 2025. However, they need to be preparing themselves. We all need to be preparing ourselves for 2035 and 2045. It's like you know, when you watch football, like the quarterback doesn't throw the ball. When the ball is hiked, you don't throw the ball to where this wide receiver is right now. As soon as the ball is hiked, you throw it to where he's going to be,
right,
40 yards downfield.
Right.
That's when you throw the ball. We're preparing we're throwing the ball to the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. Like when the ball is hiked, the wide receiver not even there. He's gone.
Yeah.
Right? So this is how we got to start thinking, right? But we're not thinking. We're you know, and again, we're not thinking because a lot of us lack the critical thinking ability, which I claim, if we reverse engineer it and back map it, can be found in mathematical training. Because that's why I often say all roads lead to mathematics. Mm-hmm. So we got to start as adults. And here's another thing too, like, that I wanted to address on today's program, is that adults have to get over our fear of mathematics. We have to get over that. Grown men,
yeah,
got to get over it. Grown women, got to get over that.
I think it's true. Aunties, I think it's true because so they can be an example to the children.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. Because yeah, what happens is we start, because when we have that fear or that trepidation or that anxiety around math, it, mm-hmm, regardless of, even if we try to hide it, you can't hide that from them kids. Them kids know.
Yeah.
Them kids understand. There's classroom teachers that have a fear of mathematics, but they need a job though.
Mm-hmm.
I get it. You know, I'm not knocking them for that, but you got to, they definitely got to learn the math and get over their own fears of mathematics, right? Because mm-hmm, the kids pick up on it. And then, like, in terms of a child with their parent, the child will look at the parent and be like, oh, my mom's not good at math. Oh, my dad's not good at math. And then the child draws a conclusion. Because then the child will say, oh, well, look, this house that we live in is comfortable. This apartment that we live in is comfortable. This car that I ride around in is comfortable. I have the food that I like. I have the snacks that I like. I have a PS5. I get Jordans when they come out. I get Nike Air Max. I get my haircut every 2 weeks. It looks like everything. Life is good.
Yeah.
And you know what? My parents are able to afford all of these things to me, and they're not even good at math. So why the hell do I need to be good at math?
Mm.
Not knowing the whole story. And also, again, not understanding that the opportunity that their parent may have may not be available for you in 20 years because the economy will be different, right? This child today, their parent compete with artificial intelligence, but that child today will have to compete with artificial intelligence. So, and these are the problems. So we gotta get over our fear of mathematics and learn the math so we can also become the primary educators. Cause it's like, Imam Jamil Al-Amin, political prisoner, shout out to him, formerly known as H. Brown of SNCC, ran with Kwame Ture in the 1960s, said any institution that you don't control can be weaponized against you. Mm-hmm. The public school system, we don't control it. We don't control the public school system, and it is weaponized against us on a regular and daily basis, even with the well-meaning black teachers that are in it, even with the well-meaning black principals that are in it. There are things that happen way above their pay grade that make it very difficult to provide quality education, right? So parents have to become the primary educators. And my ambitious goal that I say every time I get the opportunity to, I'm going to say it here too. School has to become a space for practice. Math class has to become a space for practice. Mm-hmm. Math class has to be similar to recess for our young children, in the sense that children like going to recess because they get to practice the skills they already have and show off the skills they already have. They step into recess on the outside in the back or wherever they are in the gym or wherever with confidence because they're practicing things they learned in their community, in their neighborhood, on their block, on the rec center, in their hood or wherever, right? They get to do that. Math mm-hmm. class has to be the same way. We have to be, our children have to be going to school to practice what they learned in the house. It's almost as if we, in desperate times call for desperate measures. Regardless if you have limited time as a parent, you almost have to function as a homeschooler. We have to do this. There's no way around it, right? We can't compromise on this. This is something that we have to start doing. So all them people that, you know, if you know somebody that was homeschooling their kids and you thought they was weird and you thought their kids weren't going to be socialized, and the first thing you said was, well, what are they going to do for socialization, right? You need to go talk to them people about the methods that they use to homeschool their children, because that's what you need to start doing. And if you send them to school, which is what you do, you're doing what you got to do. I get it. School has to be a space for them to practice those skills. Mm-hmm. And then also what that also can do is that can alleviate some of the issue with racist white teachers, racist Asian teachers, Arab teachers, also bourgeois Negro black teachers mm-hmm. that don't really like black kids because they have internalized anti-black self-hatred that is being projected outward on other black people that look like them, right? They become irrelevant. They become mm-hmm. more irrelevant, I should say, because I don't need to be as vulnerable to you, because learning is a very vulnerable experience. So if I don't really need to learn from you in the pure sense of learning, and you're not my primary educator, then your racism towards me is not as relevant. Your disdain towards me because you're classist and, you know, you're a black person, you know, you have middle class values and bourgeois Negro values that E. Franklin Frazier talked about in his book, The Black Bourgeoisie, which I also recommend everybody to read, right? Mm-hmm. You got one of them black teachers in your child's class, that teacher becomes less relevant.
Right.
My child's just there to practice. Just give them the worksheet, put the problems on the board, give them the textbook, and get out their way. And they might have a couple questions here and there, right? But for the most part, the community has already taught them this, right? The community's already taught them this. I'm only sending them there because I got to go to work, and I don't want them sitting in the house by themselves all day, right? And I know that's something different. That's a different way of looking at things, but that's what we have to do. We got to become the community, but also the parents have to be taught. So then here comes, this is why I create the resources that I create. This is why, one of the main reasons I maintain the All This Math YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. So on the YouTube channel, they can go in there and look at videos of how to do these different math skills and math concepts and how to understand them and how to mm-hmm. break the problems down and how to solve problems in different levels of math, from arithmetic all the way up to calculus one, right? Also the book that I wrote, How to Use All This Math Volume 1, which is a resource guide for parents. So I can show parents how to take everyday activities and kind of convert them into teachable moments in arithmetic, algebra, geometry, you know, and just showing them how to look. The things you're already doing anyway, when y'all are riding in the car together with your children, when you're in the grocery store with your children, when you're in the kitchen with your children, or you're upstairs and, you know, minding your business, or you're doing your daughter's hair, or you, you know, whatever, you might be, you know, father might be cutting his son's hair or whatnot, mm-hmm. you know. All of these things you can create mathematical learning opportunities out of all of those activities. And that's what the book is for. You know, the book, How to Use All This Math Volume 1, available on Amazon currently, right? So, but these are the things that we have to do. And I also want to add just one more thing to that idea, which is, you know, the piece about fathers. You know, like women and mothers typically, in my experience, from, you know, being an educator for the last 20 years, being, you know, running my tutoring business, you know, since 2017, I find that, you know, women and mothers tend to do the lion's share right. of the work in right. terms of academics, you know, providing academic opportunities and educational support to the children. That's got to change. Like, brothers have to do more. I don't think that women should do less, but I think brothers have to start doing more. I don't think they need to necessarily replace the mothers and replace the women and replace the sisters, but the brothers got to start doing more. If you think about it in terms of math, think about like math anxiety that we often talk about. Think about children come home, try to do homework. They get emotional. They get upset. They get angry. Some children almost come to tears because they can't understand the mathematics, right? They can't get it. As a father, you want to, and I'm a father, you know, and you know, so I got three children, so I know what this feels like. I want to be able to protect my children from negative experiences. I want to be able to protect them from harm. There's a harm involved with being so frustrated as a child, being so frustrated, you're sitting at a dining room table or sitting at a kitchen table or sitting on the floor or sitting on your bed trying to do your homework, and you're almost in tears. That's harm. as a father, you want to be able to protect your child from that. You want to be able to calm your child down and put their mind at ease and say, look, baby girl or youngin, I got you. I'm going to show you how to do this. I'm going to show you how to do these problems. Don't even worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
Relax. Got this. We're going to get through this together. But as a father, you got to know the math. You can't do that for them, your child or your grandchild or your niece or your nephew, if you don't know the math. So you got to learn the math. So we got to reorganize ourselves and reprioritize some things, you know, shift some things or shift some of our priorities around in our life some kind of way so that we can learn mathematics as men, right? That has to become part of the requirements for manhood, knowing mathematics. Because, again, it's so important because it's not just about math homework, right? Just like Ella Baker said, you know, with the sit-in movement, it's not just about a hamburger. Right? It's much deeper than that. With mathematics, again, we talked about this in the beginning of the program. It's about developing problem-solving skills. It's about developing critical thinking skills. And these are life skills. These are survival skills. So by being able to help you as a grown man, being able to help your child with their math and being able to protect them from math anxiety and math phobia, what you're really doing is you're preparing them for life, which is our responsibility as fathers anyway.
Mm-hmm.
We may not look at it like that because we may not have been taught ourselves years ago. We may not have been taught the importance of mathematics. We may just look at it as, oh, it's just some class I had to take just to pass and, you know, get my high school diploma or get my credit so I could pass on to the next grade. But, you know, it's really not that important. I never, like everybody's famous line, I never used this. First of all, like, how do you know if you never use it? You don't really understand math well enough to understand that you do use it. Use it on a regular basis.
Yeah. Well, listen, we're going to take a break. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we'll open up the phone lines. There's a number of you in the queue. I know I want to talk to Brother Akil Parker, the brother who has all that math. And, you know, and as you heard, he makes it accessible to all of us, man, you know, because he's doing his best to try to make sure that we understand where we should be and the things that we need to do. So we're going to take a break. We're gonna play some Roy Ayers. Roy Ayers made his transition, and that's kind of, you know, tough. That because Roy Ayers is a tough guy, brother. I never forget when I first heard Roy Ayers. This club in Milwaukee they were doing jazz sets. And this is before he went commercial, so to speak, if you want to use that term. And you know, him on them vibes and so forth. It was so good. It's a small club, so more intimate setting. And then I've seen him many times before that. In fact, when I was the president of the African World Festival, we brought him to Milwaukee, him and Lonnie Liston Smith and others. So I always loved Roy Ayers. And in fact, I play 2000 Black and Red, Black, and Green. But we're going to play Sunshine, My Life. Everybody loves the sunshine, you know, because we do. And we'll miss and we love Roy Ayers. Yeah. Everybody loves the sunshine. Hold on, family. Let me get it. Let me do it right.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media. Part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Sunshine. Everybody. sun. Sunshine. Folks get down in the sunshine. Sunshine.
Yeah.
Folks get brown in the sunshine. Sunshine. Everybody loves the sunshine. Sunshine. Everybody loves the sunshine. Sunshine. Folks get down. In the sunshine. Sunshine. Folks get brown in the sunshine.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And Roy Ayers, everybody loves the sunshine. Yeah. Like I said, I usually play 2000's Got to Be Black, and he made that back in 1975. He made that in 1975, 25 years before the date, and now we're 25 years, 50 years ago. 50 years ago. And of course, Red, Black, and Green, we play on this program, but Roy Ayers, what a brother. Yeah. Gone, but never be forgotten. And of course, with musicians, music lives on. Music lives on. We're talking today with Brother Akil Parker out of Philadelphia, talking about all that math. And we're going to open the phone lines up for you brothers and sisters who want to get a chance to give Brother Akil some questions. And I know he'll provide some answers because he's always ready. Brother Akil Parker, you with us, man?
Yeah.
I know you.
Kill with a K.
Huh?
Kill with a K.
Kill with a K. That's right. That's right. Kill with a K. A-K-I-L. Kill. okay, we got Brother Irv. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Baba Oshie. How are you? And good afternoon to your guests. How are you, my brother?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling in.
No, brother. Anytime you on here, I'm going to call in because you. I see what you're doing, and this is how I interpret what you've been saying for the last few minutes. You are attempting to change the attitude about math. In other words, you're not changing math. You're changing the way we think about math. And when you change the thought, you change the action, which is so interesting to me, man, because I did grow up. I'm not as old as Oshie, but I look better too, but that's another story. But my thing is, but the thing about math, I did grow up in that era that math was hard. Man, you don't want to take that math class. I can't even spell geometry. Tell you how much I didn't like math. So right. I understand the fight that you're in, and you're winning because math is such a, once you start to learn math, you start to learn how much fun math is. Not to be that you're so much smarter than everyone else. Oh, I'm not smarter than you. I'm going to show you how you already knew this because you use it in your everyday life. When you go to the market, in your head, you're calculating how much it's going to cost. Mm-hmm. That's math, correct? I mean, you make math every day. You make math into the language that we speak every day that we don't even know we're speaking, which is so interesting. But when you see an Asian do math, oh, he's so smart. Oh, man, that Asian's smart. He's not smart. He's not smart.
Yeah, he's just short. Yeah.
Correct. And when we look at history, especially our history, because that's what I'm most concerned with, we look at all these genius American Africans that have invented things, that have all these things that you would think that some other culture did. But we did it. We did the internet. We did the cell phone. We as a people are not lacking in math. I just think the opportunity and the attitude, the mindset has to be changed. And I commend you, brother, on what you're doing. And if there's anything that you get stuck on, I'm glad you got stuck on math, brother, because you are really inspiring me today. Thank you so much. Thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate you calling in, bro.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate you. All right.
Yes, sir.
All right. Brother Lusk, you met Brother Ted Lusk in Columbus, Georgia. He came from Montgomery.
Jumbo Habari Ghani, Brother Akil, Theodore Lushia. We met him in Columbus.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
How are you?
I'm doing today? Yeah, today's a good day. Well, every day's a good day. Today's just
very
one of them.
Good. Yeah. I thank you for your presentation and your time. A couple of things come to mind. One, you know, this mathematical thinking that you were mentioning does have a way to help us understand ourselves in the world. I agree. Okay. And I don't want to refer to Socratic because of Socrates, right, and Greek. I would rather prefer leaning on our elder, ancestor now in the next few days, Neely Fuller, who made a statement. He said that all problems are solved through questions and answers. And so this discussion that I would like to have with you is, how do we really learn how to question sometimes? You know, I heard that thing you made mention about sometimes we could talk our way out of things or with regards to competition. I'm from a different perspective with regards to building. And so in building versus competition, I'm wondering how can we be able to, as a collective, to be able to ask the kinds and types of questions, okay, that would allow for an opportunity for building. And subsequently, sometimes those questions aren't the best questions in the world. Therefore, how do we learn from our failures? Hopefully that wasn't too much of a mouthful.
So what I think in response to that, I think about, I guess, being in elementary school and or maybe it was middle school, learning about writing. Right. And writing, you know, when I was introduced to writing, those five questions that I think, know, those five journalistic questions: who, what, when, where, why, and then how.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that's six. I'm not sure. Five or six. Right. So, but I think when just in our everyday experience, just in any situation we're in any environment that we're in, just asking those questions. Okay, like who is this? Okay, why? Why is this here? And now the question why can lead us to down some rabbit holes, which are very beneficial, because then once you answer one question, it's almost like when that old phrase, the man that knows that he knows nothing, right? Mm-hmm. And that's really a mathematical concept.
Yeah.
Calculus, the limit in calculus, because as you get closer and closer to zero, like the limit is zero of a function, you might be getting closer and closer to the x-axis, but you may never actually touch it because you're getting closer and closer, and the distance is getting smaller and smaller, but numbers go on forever. So you just add decimal places, right?
Yes, yes. That word asymptotic. Yeah, I got you.
Asymptotically, right? So you think about like Zeno's paradox, right? So uh-huh. Zeno's paradox that they was talking about this during the Super Bowl, the playoffs, when the Washington Commanders kept jumping off sides, and refs was like, look, if y'all keep jumping off sides, we just gonna automatically just award them the touchdown, right? And then people didn't understand, because if you go half the distance to the goal, if you penalize half the distance to the goal, theoretically, mathematically, they'll never get into the goal, right? Because if you keep taking half of a distance, you never get to zero, right? You just get half of the distance. Now, in a situation, in an actual, that's more of an abstract concept, but in a real life lived situation like that, then that might not really be able to occur. But just like the math involved in it, like mathematically, you really will never get to zero, right? So that like that connects to like, because every time you answer a question, what happens? And more questions present.
That's right.
And then one of those 10 questions. Now 10 more questions present themselves. So now you started out with one question, and now you got the answer to that one question, and then the answer to another question, and now you got 30 more questions. So now it feels like, you realize you less than what you knew when you started this whole process. But that's the beauty of it. So then it's also a way to keep us humble, because then we're realizing like, I might know a lot, comparatively to some other brothers or some other sisters that surround me in my circle, but compared to like all the knowledge and the information in the universe and in the world, I don't really know nothing out here. What is infinitesimal. That's a good word to describe it. Like my knowledge is infinitesimal compared to all of the knowledge that exists, right? Because every time you answer a question, you should be coming up with like 10 more questions or 20 more questions. Like, oh, this is like this, and what about this, and what about that, and what about that? So I think that can lead to critical thinking. Because just getting into the habit of, just asking questions, and really what we're doing is we're still getting back to the basics. Because what do children do? Like Amos Wilson would talk about this, the genius of Black children and the developmental psychology of the Black child talks about like how African children are born brilliant. What happens is a lot of these Western institutions, these neocolonial institutions, they dumb us down and they take from us the natural inherent. Scientific nature that we possess, and sometimes it's the parents that do it too. Parents contribute to that also, because in all fairness, I understand that sometimes parents have a lot of responsibilities. Parents have a lot of stress that they're under. Children, 3, 4, 5 year old child, 7, 8 year old child is asking questions about this and that and the third. Parent may not have the answer. Parent may have just worked a double shift. Parent may be tired, and then they say, "Man, get out of here with that, man. I don't know." So they. The child gets negative reinforcement from asking the question, right? And then what ends up happening is after a repeat that experience being repeated, then the child's like, man, I ain't gonna ask no questions no more. Like I don't like that feeling. You know what I'm saying? So maybe it's not cool for me to ask questions. And then the children grow up, and then next thing you know, you got teenagers that don't ask about nothing. And then that's compounded based on something we talked about earlier. Artificial intelligence is gonna compound that. Because now children are being indoctrinated into this type of society where them asking the question, well, them trying to figure things out on their own is not normal. Now it's, I'm going to ask ChatGPT. ChatGPT will just tell me the answer. So that's the thing we got to fight against that. We got to become very vigilant about that in terms of how we raise our children, in terms of how we have to monitor their use of the technology. And because what it's going to do, it's going to further dumb them down. And that's the goal, because then what happens is, I look at it as the artificial intelligence and the machine learning is really just a proxy. It's like a middleman, because those programmers, you know, that are creating those technologies and creating that software, right? It's a way for them to control the people that use it, right? So if I program it a certain way, then the people are going to access it and going to use it. And now I can dictate to them what they're going to think, what they're going to do. It's almost like algorithms on social media. The algorithm on social media dictates to you what you like. It's like, hey, look at this. Take a look at that. Okay. Ask about this. So we got to be very careful with how we utilize these things, not just for our children, but even us as adults, even myself. I got to be more vigilant and, you know, more of a steward of, you know, controlling my own, you know, culture of diet of the technology and the imagery, right? Because it's a way to be controlled, like, without even knowing it. So, but yeah, we gotta keep asking those questions, like, why? Like, sure, why?
Sure. Well, thank you so very much, Brother Akil. Sante sana. Hopefully, another 334 area code. Brother Joe was another brother that you met that came from Montgomery. And hopefully he's on as well to integrate with you and engage with you as well. Thank you so very much, Brother Akil. And we will hopefully see each other.
Definitely. I look forward to it.
Right on. All right. Hey, Baba Butch.
How you feeling?
I'm feeling good, my brother. How you doing? You're on the line with Brother Akil Parker out of Philadelphia. The math man, that math. You got a question?
Great program. I agree with every. This brother's on. What year were you born? What's his name? Akil what?
Akil Parker.
Akil Parker.
Yep.
What year were you born?
I was born in 1980, like a month before Walter Rodney was assassinated.
You was born in 1980?
1980.
Okay. It's a great program. Listen. I agree with just about everything that you spoke about, because I got two grandsons. One is 14 and the other one is 20. And they're geniuses already at birth. Okay. Now I'm saying this also while I'm on the air, we don't have much time. Is Paul going to be calling in? Cause I want to hear what his comments are pertaining to this program. Is Paul going to be on the air before you go off?
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
Okay. Beautiful program. I'm waiting for Paul.
All right. All right, dear. All right, Baba. Thank you so much, brother.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Thank you.
Brother Paul, how you doing?
You know any shop for bicycle repairing? Help me, please. If you know, tell him address, please.
Brother Paul.
Again?
Address. You know, address.
Sorry. One second. Sorry, Bob Bauchi. Sorry. Sorry. Baba, I got to deal with this. Sorry, Bob Bauchi. Sorry. Can you hear me?
I can hear you very well.
Sorry. I was in the middle of doing something, a builder's merchant. Sorry about that. Yes, sir. Very interesting program. Lots of thoughts went through my mind. I mean, that's what I do for a living. I'm in IT. And over the years, I've messed about with programming. I started my life in doing programming. I went into law and I've done various other things. I taught my daughter, sat down with my two daughters and I taught them maths, and one is quite exceptional. She went into finance. She does very well there. And I went to school with a brother who got the highest mark in his maths degree in the country. But when I look at those two characters, I would never describe them as critical thinkers, not my daughter or my school friend. None of them are critical thinkers. And I was listening to the argument and it just made me think. And, you know, I say this with all due respect and very humbly. From the evidence, I don't think maths actually gives people critical thinking skills at all. I've been following AI from OpenAI and to all the developments. And I do wonder, I use AI for many things. it's a powerful tool. It's an amazing tool. Every time I use it, I just get mind blown by it. But the truth of the matter is, I'm listening to the argument and I'm wondering, I have to be honest with you, I don't really know how much. Maths is a good mind exercise, but in its practicality today, I'm not so sure it has the weight it used to have. I mean, maybe your guest can fulfill it in. Because, I mean, I use AI. I use it for anything. And it doesn't stop me thinking. I'm a critical thinker. There's no doubt about it. But it just sharpens my tools. It sharpens my mind. What does your guest say about that?
So I think it's similar to, like, using a calculator to do 9 times 4 versus just trying to think of what 9 times 4 is if you don't have 9 times 4 memorized. I mean, well, I would use a different example, like perhaps like 98 times 47. Like 98 times 47 in a calculator doesn't require much thought, just knowing how to operate the calculator and input the numbers, and the calculator will give you the output. But using your brain to think about, well, how can I figure out 98 times 47? Or what's the most efficient way to figure out 98 times 47? And then what's the solution to 98 times 47? That's the thinking exercise. So I think about the compounded effect of not using your own brain to do 98 times 47 over time. I'm sure that, you know, you're not practicing, you know, you're not using that brain power, right? So the synapses aren't firing as much as they would be. Like, imagine you go for a year, you're strictly using calculators, strictly using a calculator for all your computation versus going a year using your brain for the calculation. Would you say that there's going to be no difference in terms of your cognitive ability after that exercise and that experiment?
There's definitely going to be a difference in cognitive ability. Absolutely on point. But, you know, I do agree with you, but to a certain extent. But I also thought about something you said as well, which I think is fundamental. You said it's the way it's taught. And I absolutely agree with that, because we really do need to be able to teach it in a way that it becomes practical and useful. Because even on the argument you've just given me there, what goes through my mind, I can run, and I used to be able to run fast. But why do I want to keep going? I'm 54 years of age. I don't need to run fast now. So, you know, if I have to run, I'll run. You know what I mean? So it does not practical for me to go and start running. Or run like I used to run. So the reality of it is if it's not practical to you, maths for me to go exercise that example you give me is a waste of time for me, because I'm too busy. I just need things to make things happen for me, make things happen, you know, in real life, not just theory. So I do agree with you to a certain extent, but and I accept that the fact that it's the way it's taught, and it really needs to be taught in a way that it's to young people, that they can see the practicality of it and they can apply it in their practical life. It has to be applicable in their life as opposed to just theory or just opposed to mental exercise.
I think that's valid, but a question I would have for you is, one of the things you said initially was you don't consider your daughter in her position or your classmate that scored very highly to be critical thinkers. So I think we'd have to, that leads me to the question of, how do you define critical thinking?
Well, that's a good question. Let me explain to my daughter. Like, for instance, you know, I'd answer, and it really bothers me, I'll answer questions, even about maths. She doesn't know the answer. But yet, she can pass any exam. And it just tells me something. You know, I wanted her to actually do maths, and she studied maths and go into a bank, but she studied economics. I didn't want to do that. But the reality is she's good at maths. She's excellent at maths. But even sometimes when I ask her questions about maths, she doesn't know in a practical sense, because she, in her head, she only studied maths to pass the exam so she can go to university and do well at university and come out and get a job. And most people I speak to are like that. I had a computer business. And most people who came out, they lack common sense. They lack the ability to transfer their academic knowledge to practical knowledge. That was a big problem for me in my business. Because when you send people out in the field, they've got you know, whatever specialties in them in. But practically, they've got no common sense and they can't do the job. And what good is that? It doesn't matter how good you are, Matt. If you can't do the job, you're a waste of time to me. You understand? Because you're out in the field and the people are actually calling me. I've just spent money on a contract. The people are actually calling me because the person who I've sent who've got the academics can't do the job because they lack common sense. So what I'm saying is, I'm going back to the point you made about the way it's taught. It has to be taught in a manner that it becomes practical. There's an argument in this country right now, in the UK where I'm at, is that they say that we need more, what's the term for it? Well, I forget the term, but it basically transfers as you have to make these educate more practical for some, you know, so they can apply it when they go out there. I forget the actual term. But brother, don't get me wrong. I absolutely agree with what you're doing. My only thing I would say is that you're right. We have, especially for the young people, we have to change the way it's taught. I heard one academic on your side of the pond say that, like for instance, basketball players, they have to be good at maths because their brain is calculating when they go to do a run and jump, and they jump up and they put it in the basket. And when I heard that, it was actually the first time math made sense to me, because it's true. You know, if you're good at sport, your brain's doing calculations. If you're good at movement, your brain is calculating. So you really are a mathematician. But who's told you that? Who's told you that? And who's actually told you how to take that, your mind doing those calculations, and turn it into maybe an academic thing? Or, you know, I think you get where I'm coming from.
I do. And like to your point, I'm glad you bring this up. I'm glad you bring this up, because this helps me to think more deeply about this topic. But one of the things I would say is that a lot of people that have credentials, you know, such as, you know, in the past math courses and maybe even have math degrees, that, like, as to your point about how it's taught, many people are taught mathematics in the way that, which is one of the things that motivates me so much to do the work that I do, is because as a child, I was taught math from an algorithm, right? I was given formulas, and I learned where to replace the letters with certain numbers, and then do the computation to get to the answer. A lot of people are not educated in terms of the concepts behind the mathematical topics, and also are not able to develop a certain, like, mathematical flexibility, or they don't understand the relationships between the numbers and between the different processes. So absolutely. What I would say is there are a lot of people that may, again, have credentials, but they don't really, as I would say, they don't really know math, quote unquote. They don't really know math, right? They've been able to perform, do well on tests, do well on different assessments, but they've never really learned math on a very deep level or a very conceptual level. And when you lack that conceptual understanding, then that's why, you know, that's where the critical thinking comes into play. Because critical thinking comes from, oh, conceptually, I know why this equation that looks like this, or this trigonometric is identical, but the two expressions look absolutely nothing alike when you first look at the original problem. But because I understand the relationships between, you know, sine and cosine and tangent and secant squared and this and that and this and that, then I understand the concept behind the trigonometry. Now I understand the relationships between it. But so that's why I can also then transfer that to another area of life. And that's when you get into, you know, okay, well, I understand this is the relationship in mathematics. And then, oh, now let's look at the social sciences. Let's look at what's happening in this community, or let's look at economics and economic relationships, or let's take the concept from physics, which is basically just a math class, basically just, you know, math applications. All physics and chemistry is just math applications, and let's apply that to individual relationships or social relationships, or, you know, or how money works in a financial system, right? When you really understand those deep concepts, and you're able, because then you're developing the critical thinking abilities just through practice. Right, because when you're looking at equations and solving equations and constantly thinking about, okay, what's step one, what's step two, or maybe should I do it this way, should I do it that way, this is a it creates a certain worldview, right? which breeds you for just the critical thinking process, just asking this question, asking that question, trying to decide, okay, does this make sense? Does that make sense? Maybe I should not do this. Maybe I should do this. And just constantly doing like the same way in which computers are designed. Computers do this. If you talk about, autonomous cars or what have you, like, how does the car know to stop? How does the car know to speed up, slow down? How does it know if it's safe to switch lanes, right? They're constantly assessing the environment. So our human brains have to be trained, and conditioned to do that. And oftentimes when there's an over-reliance on technology, artificial intelligence, we lose that practice. So our brains, in a certain sense, they atrophy, similar to how when somebody has a broken bone and their arm or their leg is in a cast for 3 months. When the cast comes off, then what? The muscles are all flabby and they've atrophied. I believe that, the human brain, function experiences the same thing.
Okay. Let me get Brother Paul. Brother Paul, go ahead.
Yeah,
make your comment, then I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, that was a fantastic answer. And, thank you for that. But when you were talking, I was thinking, I think the root of the problem, I think what I'm trying to say, that the explanation, the way you articulated that answer, it just made me think that, and I know you're going to agree with this anyway, we need, especially our people, we need more teachers like yourself, who have that overstanding.
I say, you're right.
We that's what we need, because look, I had the benefit of a tutor. My mom got us a tutor, but I remember him giving us some formulas, and I can't 100% say I fully understood the formulas,
go ahead, Paul.
But what I would do when I went to school with them, I remember the teacher saying she could see that the answer's right, but she didn't understand how I got there. And that made me tend to think, well, I didn't understand that. How could the answer be right, but you don't understand how I got there? But now I know, that was then, but now I know there's many ways to get to an answer, but she didn't actually explain that. So it made me doubt myself. Now, in the explanation you've just given, we need more people like yourself in these institutions, black males or black females, especially black males, where people you can actually relate to, because that's another problem. If you can't relate to the person, it's very hard to grasp the interest. So thank you.
All right. Right on, Brother Paul. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you, Paul.
All right. Yeah. Jay, good afternoon. How you doing, Jay? Hello? Jay Williams, Birmingham. How you doing? Okay.
That must have got disconnected.
Yeah.
Before we go, you want to talk about our journeys of black mathematicians?
Hey, Jay.
Okay, my brother Akil, how are you, my brother?
What's going on? Your voice sounds familiar.
Yeah, brother.
You know this is. Brother, all I got to do is ask you the next question. How's that daughter of yours doing? I ain't seen no posts lately.
She's doing well, but she's a teenager now, so she thinks she's too cool to be on camera these days,
Well, hey, listen, you know how that go, man. But as one could see, she's smart as a whip, so it's all good. Hey, listen, man, I wanted to ask you, how is your classes going with that Nubia situation?
They're going really well, actually. I'm really good. Enjoying it. We're starting off with the history of some of the ancient Kemetic history and how mathematics developed in the Nile Valley region, the Nile Valley civilization. And we haven't really gotten into the hardcore, mathematical topics yet, but this is a nice, foundation that we're laying. So the classes are going really well. I've been getting a lot of good feedback. within the Nubia app, you know, from, and people like, you know, commenting, you know, during the class and, you know, cause the class is on Thursday mornings from 9 AM to 10:30 Eastern time. But, you know, there's a record, the recording is available. So anybody that's on the platform, they can watch it, you know, they can consume the content whenever they want to. So, but yeah, it's been, I'm looking forward to, I've enjoyed the past 2 weeks that we've been doing it. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to it, you know, doing it more and more, you know, on a weekly basis, you know, cause I'm really, I'm almost, kind of like get upset that I only got an hour and a half. Cause I, you know, I'd be wanting to, you know, just keep going, you know.
Right. Now let me ask you: are you still teaching, or are you just tutoring now?
I'm tutoring, but this semester I was teaching one class at Cheney up here in Pennsylvania. But I didn't teach that class this semester because I wasn't able to. I wasn't able to teach that class this semester due to my time schedule, my time constraints. So right as of now. Yeah, I'm just mainly doing tutoring and also presentations, you know, presentations where I promote my YouTube channel and doing presentations, you know, at different schools and, you know, doing workshops and, you know, things of that nature. Just trying to, again, just propaganda, push back on a lot. There's so much negative propaganda that, you know, we've all received our whole lives, you know, around mathematics. So I'm really just trying to do the work of, you know, reversing a lot of that propaganda, you know.
Because what I wanted to ask you was, are any of the kids that you're working with into like the STEM coding and things of that nature?
I've tutored some students that have interest in that, you know, but they're like, you know, maybe on the middle school or high school level that they're interested in perhaps going into that as a career. One day, but the students I've taught at Cheney, they're education majors, so they're interested in becoming your middle school teachers, you know.
Yeah, because what I was gonna say to you is, whenever you get the opportunity to be around these young kids that are, you know, into the STEM situation, you should talk to them about the possibility of trying to get government security clearance. Because the thing is, once you can get that government security clearance and you're into the STEM field, your opportunity for employment is much greater, which could lead to, you know, some really good things, you know, even though they're talking about all of these jobs that are being cut by the federal government. What they're not saying is that a lot of these contractors of the federal government overseas are looking for employees. And it's definitely an excellent stepping stone to accumulate wealth and to be able to take it to whatever level you wish to, being an employee or owner. So if you get the opportunity, definitely pass along to these young kids looking into getting government security clearance, because that's definitely a path that would be a lot more beneficial than just graduating from college and looking for a job. But, you know, other than that, man, congratulations always, man, on your success and what you're doing, man. I must admit, I pop in on your YouTube channel every now and then to see the good work that you're laying down, and I also try to pass it along.
Right on, Jay.
So,
well, I appreciate that, brother.
Keep up the good work, my brother. Right on.
Have a good weekend, Jay. Peace.
Hey, you too, my brother. I'm listening.
All right. Ralph, how you doing, my brother? How you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Brother Oshie? And I want to say, good afternoon to your guests. I'm enjoying the conversation. And Brother Jay just brought up a good point. I'm with a software engineer right now, and we're trying to recruit our younger brothers and sisters. And the biggest obstacle is security clearances. Those are the biggest obstacles. But once these brothers and sisters can get into this threshold and we've helped plenty of them, it's a six-figure job waiting for them. So, you know, I'll talk to you. I'll forward you the information a little bit later, Brother Osi, so you can give it to Brother Akil.
Okay.
And Brother Akil, I'm a person that I only speak from my experience. I don't really speak about what I think or what I think. You know, you are bringing up some very valid points that took me back to high school because I knew enough to pass the exam. But math was not important. The only time math really became important to me was when they placed me at 19 years old in a machine shop, and I was able to convert decimals into fractions, like, you know, 0.436 is 7/16, 0.875 is 7/8. And, you know, I said, like, well, wait a minute. This is what they taught me in the whole time of school. So now, as an electrical instructor, the younger brothers and sisters that dropped out of high school, you know, I incorporate math, simple math, division, algebra, and they were always terrified of it until I showed them how they need that in their skill. So you're bringing up some very valid points, brother. And like I said, I only speak from my experience, and that is my experience, man. We have to make these things important to us. It was a summer school teacher from Baltimore that told me, said, what are you doing in summer school? You're too intelligent for that. But she didn't know I came from a whole school full of racists. So, you know, you took me all the way back to high school, brother, and I'm enjoying the conversation myself, and I had to call in to contribute.
I
am from Philadelphia area, so if it does interest you into, like, get some of these younger brothers and sisters with this software engineer, because we are pushing hard to get our people employed. You know what I mean? That's what we're trying to do. So, you know, if you're interested, Brother Oshie has my information, and man, we could talk. I know Brother Elliot and Brother Richard too, so we can rap. All right?
Yeah, definitely am. I'm gonna get your information from Baba Oshie.
All right.
Yes, sir.
You bet.
All right, have a blessed evening. And
all right, Brother
rest
Ralph.
Of your day. All right.
You too. Baba Oshie, can I respond to that?
Oh, sure, please do.
So, well, not just his comment, but a few of the comments about, you know, the importance of math and how it connects to the STEM disciplines. I want to, you know, I'm gonna connect all this together, but I want to give a shout out to the late Willie Mays, baseball player from the New York Giants,
mm-hmm.
Also from the New York Mets. I'm gonna show the connection in a second. Daryl Strawberry, Doc Gooden, and also Mookie Wilson, right? They were three brothers.
Are you a Mets fan, man?
I'm a Mets fan. Like those brothers. I'm a Yankees fan. Growing up, when I was, I was born in the Bronx before my family moved to Baltimore. I lived in New York, so I would watch the Yankees and the Mets, right?
Okay.
But I was more of a Yankees fan because I lived in the Bronx.
Okay.
But I bring them up because Mets, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is what I believe, and I've had conversations with people about this, we should convert STEM to METS, because one of the things the acronym STEM does is it gives a kind of a misrepresentation in that math is on par with science, technology, and engineering, when in fact, the math is really the foundation.
Mm.
So another reason I do the work I do is because I want all the young brothers and the young sisters to be so solid, so proficient and confident in mathematics that a lot of those science, technology, and engineering jobs become like a foregone conclusion, right? So, you know, you have the math first, and then you can go into the engineering, the technology, and, you know, the science. And I brought up Willie Mays because, of course, you know, he played for the New York Giants, and the Mets got their colors from the combination. They took the royal blue from the Brooklyn Dodgers. They took the orange from the New York Giants. So the Mets would have, you know, their colors and whatnot.
Because I was a Mets fan, and of course Willie Mays played in the World Series that year. The Mets went to the World Series and unfortunately didn't do well because he was on a decline. But Willie Mays was probably, no doubt, one of the greatest players of all time.
Right, yep. Right. But that key is you know, that the math, man. If we get our kids, like, you know, just, you know, like, it's like with sports, with athletics. If you, you know, you're developing children to be athletic, you know, they're good at running, you know, jumping, they're agile. Mm-hmm. Then they kind of just take their pick. Okay, what sport do I want to play? Do I want to go? I can play basketball. I can play football. I can play baseball. I can play soccer. You know, I have those foundational skills mm-hmm. that I can pivot and go in any direction. When our children are competent at mathematics, when they're confident at mathematics, then it's like, oh yeah, you know what? I might want to be an anesthesiologist. Maybe I'll go over here and try to do that. I'll pursue a medical career, or maybe I'll be a computer scientist and I'll write mm-hmm. programs, or, you know, create, you know, computer mainframes or whatnot, whatever it is they specifically do. Or, you know, I'll be a computer engineer, or, you know, a mechanical, or civil, and industrial, and electrical engineer, right? But that foundation is math. So many of our young people that go to college, they may have ended up being very successful in those fields, but because they never have a solid foundation in math, they won't even go in that direction. They won't even go into those fields because they're like, oh,
well, I got to go up to calculus. Because a lot of times those fields require that skill. They require that area of learning.
So they're disqualified. Exactly. And you see it. And you see it. And mm-hmm. it's a scheme, right? Because you go into any elementary school, right, where there's black children. When you see those black kids that are like, nah, I hate math. When they're saying they hate math in third grade and second grade already, right, or fourth grade, when, you know, Jawaza Kanjufu talks about the fourth grade failure syndrome, when you see that, mm-hmm. then that's a child that more than likely, we do have these, you know, anomalies and these outliers sometimes.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
Kids are able to overcome, right?
Right.
But a lot of times, children that will never go into the STEM fields. Yep. They will never go into the STEM. And when I say STEM fields, I also want to distinguish, you know, what I'm saying about the STEM fields, because a lot of our more assimilationist brothers and sisters, they just want our kids to go into STEM fields so they can go get jobs working for white people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
I think we got to go beyond that, and we got to say, okay, we want to be trained in the ability to perform STEM positions or METS positions so that we can build these companies and these organizations for ourselves so they can serve our communities and solve our own communities' problems, not so that we can go make six figures and solve other people's problems. Now, we got to do what we got to do, you know. You know, and a lot of us don't have engineering firms. A lot of black people not as many people may own engineering firms or may own, you know, science firms or, you know, and whatnot. So we got to do what we got to do. Right. But the goal should be, let's take this skill set and let's create, you know, let's be more nationalistic in our thinking. So we have the math skills, and then we're going to, you know, go into the METS disciplines or the STEM disciplines, and we're going to create something for our community, because that's how we solve our problems. And we can't maintain a nation, right, or build a nation or maintain it if we, you know, don't have those types of companies, organizations that are doing it. So mm-hmm. we got to get into that. But the math is the foundation for all that, and not just those STEM disciplines, but even business. You know, business opportunities, accounting. Mm-hmm. You know, even law. If you want to practice law, you're studying logic. When you're practicing law, you're making legal arguments. Logic is a sub discipline of geometry, right? When we take a geometry class in high school, and we have to do geometric proofs or complete geometric proofs, we're practicing logic. We're practicing making a logical argument. Okay, prove to me that this is a triangle based on the information. Or prove to me that this triangle is congruent to this other triangle. Or prove to me that this angle is congruent to that angle. Like, prove it. Let's use logic. A lot of people get caught up in, oh, it's shapes. I don't care about shapes. I don't want to be an interior decorator or interior designer. I don't want to be an architect. Why would I need to know geometry? Again, we got to stop being so superficial in our thinking, right? Yeah. We got to start to look deeper. If we can prove that this is equal to this, or this is congruent to this, when we're dealing with shapes, that's just practice. Now we can look at a real life situation, a social science situation, a situation where we're trying to prove that, oh, okay, this situation over here in this community is equivalent to this situation over here in that community. So then if we prove that, then it's like, okay, well, why are you treating this community different from that community? Mm-hmm. They're doing the same damn thing.
White,
the white folks there is doing the same thing that we're doing, but just you looking at us, treating us like we savages, right? We all doing the same thing, right? But a lot of us don't have that mental ability and that critical thinking ability to think like that. And what I'm arguing is that doing things like completing geometric proofs gets you in the mindset. It develops and trains your mind to start thinking like that. So that way you don't got to listen to these people on, you know, social media, or listen to these people on the news or whatever, trying to basically tell you that, you know, one thing ain't the same, this ain't the same thing as that, when you know it is. You know it's the same thing.
Right. Well, listen, I got another caller here. Crystal Gills.
Hey, yeah, it's me, Crystal. How you doing, Brother Akil? Hey, how you doing, Baba?
How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine.
I'm well. So I don't know. I came in kind of late, and I don't know if you already talked about it. You just talked about it some, but you know my granddaughter, and she's been complaining a lot lately about not being good at math, but she is. So I know some of it is like a socialization of it, like all these children think that they can't do math. So we do, you know, tune into your channel and watch your videos and everything, but I'm kind of struggling with her not believing in herself. So I tell her, you know, have to practice, you have to do, you know, you have to practice in math to be, you know, proficient in advance. So I'm just trying to get some tips, because, you know, if I tell her you said it, Akil, it's like the gospel. So,
I say.
So I just want to, because I appreciate you so much. And, you know, I'm telling the listeners, too, that if y'all ever have any math issues or anything, you need to reach out to Brother Akil, because his passion is really his mission and his purpose. And he is the best for our community when it comes to math. But just give me some tips on what I should be doing.
So I would remind, first of all, I appreciate, you know, your vote of confidence. I appreciate, you know, all the consistent support that y'all down in Mississippi have been offering to me over the past few years. But I would let her know that it's normal for it to be difficult sometimes. It's going to get difficult. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that she's not good at math. Like, remind her of that, you know. Mm-hmm. And but she's got to keep, you got to keep practicing. And with every problem is going to get easier and easier, right? But the difficulty is normal, right? It's kind of like a lot of us, we expect that, like, you know, we're always supposed to feel good, you know, as adults, you know, and that's why, like, you know, we think about, like, the mental health industry, we always want somebody, we always think we're supposed to feel good all the time. And if we're not feeling good, then something's wrong. Not nothing necessarily wrong. I mean, that's life. We're not always going to feel good. But, you know, in you know, pharmaceutical industry, they prey on that, because they say, oh, we're going to program these people to think that they're supposed to always feel good. So then when they don't feel good, it's like, oh, well, I can't just make myself feel better, so let's give them a drug. I'm going to give you a drug that's going to make you feel good all the time, right? So then they get you hooked on the drugs now, right? So even with math, times it's going to be difficult. It's going to be hard. You may get the wrong answer. That's fine, as long as you're trying to fit. And even wrong answers are the answers that you learn the most from. But then you got to think about, well, why did I get it wrong? Or why doesn't it make sense? You know?
Yeah.
So I think telling her those things, that it's normal and acceptable, and it's okay. It's okay not to get the correct answer immediately and initially.
Mm-hmm.
Let her know that that's okay.
Okay.
Right? And now also, no, don't worry about it. Don't worry about if some of her classmates get it and she doesn't. Don't let that cause her to think that she's not a quote-unquote math, a so-called math person. She's still a math person, right? We're all math people. To be a math person, you just have to be a person, and you have to do math. That's it.
That's it.
That's it.
Right.
All right.
So, and then, because I have something else.
Go ahead, please.
So they just took their test, right, the state test. And I think a lot of that is the anxiety that comes with that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how do we get our children, but I know you just said practice and all that, but it's still that anxiety that comes with it, and our children don't have the confidence to start with, you know, because I'm not just thinking about her now, I'm thinking about the collective of our children who are in these institutions, right? And they test them so much and all that. So, you know, it's just a conversation, and I'm glad that you are so passionate. And you always stand on the same square, and that's appreciated, because we need that consistency in our community and teaching our children. So, yeah, I'm just thinking out loud now.
Yeah, it's just the crystal. Like, there's specific questions, specific problems that she has. You know, you just send me a picture of the problems, and I'll create some content.
All right. Thank you, Sister.
I appreciate that.
Thank you, Sister Crystal.
Thank you.
All right, dear brother. We appreciate that. And I'm going to use that acronym, METS. Mathematics, yeah. Engineering, Technology, and Science. I'm using METS.
Yes. The math comes first.
That's right.
The math is the gatekeeper. Some people call it a, so what we want is the math to be the gateway. But for a lot of us, and a lot of the way the institutions are set up, right, math is the gatekeeper. Math is like the bouncer at the club, right? And, you won't get in.
That's right.
It's about inclusion. It's like when I do SAT prep, I let the students know today, say, look, this is not a test of inclusion. This is a test of exclusion. This test is a way to justify.
Right, you're not getting you in. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
The way to justify. It's like on paper. Now it's like on paper. I got a test. There's a number, right, that can justify me not either not letting you into this school at all, or you won't get any scholarship money. Yeah. If you don't get any scholarship money, school might be too expensive for you. Like, you might want to go to Howard. Howard's real popular. Mm. Howard's very expensive, and that's a private institution. So you might not be able to go there. But now, okay, you took this SAT. You only scored this. Oh, no, you ain't going. Right. And I can justify you not being able to go.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So it's a test of exclusion. So we got to look at it like that. This is war. This is intellectual warfare. Like Jacob Carruthers.
That's right.
This is intellectual warfare. So we got to be very clear about this. This is not a game. It's not all funny games. This ain't nothing nice. This ain't sweet. Right. This is intellectual warfare. But parents got to get over our own fears of mathematics so that we can help our children with mathematics, our grandchildren, our nieces, our nephews. We got to be able to become the primary educators, and we got to give them that solid foundation in math early as possible. And also, don't wait for the school curriculum, right? So, if you know, the school curriculum says, oh, they're going to start doing algebra in seventh grade.
So
don't wait till seventh. You don't wait till seventh grade.
So what is
you
that?
You can start them doing.
What is that website? How do they contact you? Give our listeners some contact information, my brother.
So definitely go to the YouTube channel. A lot of people drop comments in the YouTube videos. The YouTube channel is called All This Math. Also, my company website is www.allthismath.com. I'm also on the socials, Instagram, Facebook, All This Math. Just everything is All This Math. LinkedIn, Hill Parker. I'm around.
Right
on. Definitely use and share the YouTube channel as much as possible.
All right, dear brother. Appreciate you so much, my friend. I really do.
Likewise.
You, man, from the first time I've met you, man, you're inspirational. And so be talking with you soon and get you back on the radio with me soon, okay? Because you got a lot of interest, a lot of people interested, and that's positive. All right, brothers and sisters, we end this program, like we end all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the MIND, but the MINE, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. BB for 48. BB for 48 means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Have a great weekend, family. And you be safe out there. And I'll see you on Monday. What our guest will be, Ayo Kamathi, the irritated genie. So take care, family. All right.
Oh, you go.